welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFURL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is Olga Oliker, Program Director for Europe and Central Asia at the Crisis Group. Thank you very much for joining us today, Dr. Oliker.
Thank you for having me.
All right. It's always great to have you on the podcast. Now, in the prelude just now, I mentioned a momentous development that occurred late last week. That, of course, was the Russian retreat from the southern Ukrainian city of Kherson, which is now under Ukrainian control again for the first time since shortly after Russia launched its large-scale invasion of Ukraine on February 24th. There were scenes of jubilation in Kherson late Friday and over the weekend as well. And the Russian forces have retreated. Kherson's on the right bank or west bank of the Dnieper River or Dnipro. And Russian forces have retreated to the other bank, the left bank, eastern bank. Now, just some context here. Kherson was the only regional capital in Ukraine that Russian forces have seized since the invasion in February. And in fact, they tried and failed to take several regional capitals, including Chernihiv in the north, Kharkiv and Sumy in the east, and of course, the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv. And they certainly also have had designs on Mykolaiv, Odessa, Zaporizhia, among other regional capitals in Ukraine. In fact, the only bigger city that Russian forces have taken since the invasion, and which they still hold, is Mariupol, which they virtually leveled in months of attacks that turned the city into one of many symbols of the barbarity of Russia's unprovoked assault on Ukraine. The retreat from Kherson is also the latest in a number of major setbacks for Russia on the battlefield, including a successful counterattack in which Ukrainian forces liberated a large amount of territory in the Kharkiv region and part of the Donetsk region in September. And actually, the liberation of Kherson is part of the result of part of a counteroffensive in the south by Ukrainian forces. And while Russians are certainly getting a skewed picture, Russians back home certainly getting a skewed picture of events on TV and other state media or state loyal media, they are hearing about these setbacks to some degree. In fact, the retreat from Kherson was announced on state TV in advance in what appeared to be a tightly choreographed meeting between Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu and the commander of Russian operations in Ukraine. This appeared to be meant in part to shift blame away from Putin. Putin was not involved in that meeting. So Ukraine's recapture of Kherson is a big deal, of course, but Russian forces still hold much of the southern part of the Kherson region, and they still control a so-called land bridge or land corridor leading from the Russian border westward through Mariupol and along the Azov Sea coast to the isthmus that links mainland Ukraine to Crimea, which Russia has occupied since 2014. Now, that turns out to have been a long setup for what is actually a pretty short question for Dr. Oliker. Is the liberation of Kherson a game changer, either in terms of the war in Ukraine or the situation in Russia and the perception of the war among Russians?
So thanks, Steve. You know, it's a weird game to judge because everything is constantly changing. But the real changes come somewhat more intermittently. Ukraine's counteroffensive in late August and September, that was a game changer. The Russian announcement that it was, quote unquote, annexing Ukrainian territory that it didn't even control was a game changer. Kherson is certainly important for all the reasons you said. It is tremendously important for the people of Kherson, who I think we've all seen celebrating their liberation. It's important tactically, But this is far from the end of the war, unless, of course, it is the end of the war. But what we, you know, what Kherson was, it wasn't that they had horrid battles in the city. I mean, perhaps in order to avoid that, the Ukrainians seem to have allowed, one way or another, for the Russian forces to have retreated. Having retreated, they're regrouping. Presumably, they're preparing for more fighting. Presumably, they're, you know, they found them, they've put themselves in more defensible positions and are moving around to other parts of Ukraine. You know, we don't know what either Russia's plans or Ukraine's plans are. We do know that both of them have them, right? So there are several potential fronts for this war, more in the south, certainly continuing in the east. And we've heard a lot about Russia moving forces and equipment into Belarus. Most analysts think that's a lower probability, at least for the time being, but it's still something to keep an eye on. And then domestically within Russia, this is another one. Wait and see. To some extent, we've seen the Kremlin try to convince the population of Russia that this is World War II all over again. And that creates, and I'm speculating a bit here, but that does create a certain amount of space because if you think back to your World War II history, it started quite badly for Russia when the Germans invaded. It started quite badly indeed in Ukraine. So, you know, I think that there's a narrative you can say that it will still get better. I don't know how believable that is, and I don't even know how much the Kremlin believes it. But, you know, I guess my bottom line with a whole lot of words is to say it's too early to tell.
Okay, well, that certainly makes sense. And I would just note, I just saw on the narrative about World War II and the idea that, you know, this is kind of a setback at the start. At one point, Putin said fairly recently, still a few months ago, that we have not yet begun to fight, essentially. And I believe last night on state TV in Russia, Dmitry Kiselyov, who's kind of one of the main conduits of the message, the propaganda from the Kremlin, it's said that this is a setback, but the troops will be back, and Kherson will be recaptured. I don't know. You know, obviously, that's something that a lot of Russian propagandists are saying. But whether that's believable, by the people, I guess is another question. But certainly, and the idea of portraying this as World War II, as kind of a repeat of World War II, is, you know, it has been a big part of the state's narrative, I guess, in Russia, despite the immense differences. They've been calling the forces from the Donbass that are fighting on the Russian side, they've been calling them allies, kind of with a capital A, as if the equivalent of the allies during World War II and that sort of thing. So whether it changes the percept, whether that's, whether the kind of the Kremlin's grip on Russians' perception of the war can be held, I'm not sure. It does seem to be, I would say, slipping to some degree. But for the next question, I'm going to take less time introducing it. Basically, I will say that along with the Russian retreat from Kherson has come an increased amount of talk about talks, about negotiations, the possibility of negotiations, including signs that the United States, while not pushing Kyiv to negotiate with Moscow, certainly at this point, is suggesting that Ukraine at least show itself to be open to the idea of negotiations at some point, and to think about what its demands and its positions might be. Olga, what do you think? Are the prospects for negotiations increasing now or not really?
So I think the prospects for negotiations really increase if and when the Russians start offering concessions. The Ukrainians are winning. They feel like they're winning. They look like they're winning. They have very little incentive to offer concessions unless for some reason they know deep down that they're about to run out of weapons and money. Since the weapons and money are primarily coming from the West, the only reason they would fear that they're going to run out would be if they had a notion that Western states were going to cease supporting them. That's certainly something Russia would like to see, but it's not at all what is happening at present. So I think while the United States would certainly like to see a negotiated settlement to end this war, it's not going to tell the Ukrainians we're going to withdraw support. So go ahead and make a deal. The United States support for Ukraine isn't being done entirely out of goodwill and high morals. It's being done because of the notion that if Russia is successful in Ukraine, it will pose more of a threat to European security down the road. So, you know, I think there's still an alignment between what Ukraine wants and what the U.S. wants. I do think part of the U.S. push was that President Zelensky had been very, very forceful, saying things that, you know, that they would not be negotiating with Russia as long as Vladimir Putin was in charge of Russia. And I think the United States suspects there's a pretty good chance that if there's a deal, it's going to have to be signed with Putin's Russia, because there isn't another Russia at present, and there aren't, you know, high odds that there's going to be another Russia anytime soon. So I think they were nervous about that. But again, I think that there is an understanding that the impetus for negotiations would have to come from the Russians starting to offer something, at least with things as they stand. We've also heard talk of various discussions and negotiations between other people. Whether there's any there, I could not tell you. But I would suspect not yet. The Russians were able to withdraw their more capable forces out of Kherson. They're regrouping. I think they're still counting on the winter being on their side, though thus far the European weather has been firmly behind Ukraine. I think the Russians are hoping that it will change sides and create more pressure on European countries to question their support for Kyiv. We'll see how that works out. We'll also see what happens on the battlefield. This has been a really tough war to predict for the last going on 9 months.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the weather being on the Ukraine side so far in Europe this winter or this fall, creating kind of, you know, not as bad a situation as might have been with colder weather in terms of the energy supplies. But it does seem like this winter will be a big test in the case of resolve in the West. I'm going to ask a follow-up question that's a little bit maybe sensitive, but you mentioned kind of that the U.S. was concerned about Zelensky's previous statement that there would be no negotiations with Putin in power, or perhaps no deal signed with Putin in power. And that seems to have, he seems to have toned that down recently. He didn't mention it in a recent comments about, you know, about the potential for talks. One other issue, the Wall Street Journal reported that the U.S. kind of has suggested, you know, that when and if it came to talks, Ukraine should be considering whether to reconsider its, essentially its demand for Crimea to be returned in any kind of settlement. Crimea and obviously all the other parts of Ukraine that are now under Russian control. So I guess my question would be, do you think there's any room for movement there or not?
So I think Ukraine's prospects for reintegrating Crimea depend a great deal on how this war continues and how it ends. But they would be foolish to give it away a priori. The Russians certainly aren't giving anything away a priori. They continue to claim that they own territory that they claim to have annexed and that they never controlled. Now they control even less of it, and they continue to claim it. I think putting pressure on Ukraine to adapt its demands and expectations in advance. I think the Ukrainians are right in thinking that that's crazy. Why would they give stuff away? If they don't have to, if they've got a chance to get everything back, they're going to try to get everything back. Of course, they don't know. We don't know how things will go. But the notion that the Ukrainians, should offer some signs of goodwill or something, they were the ones that were invaded. And right now they're the ones that are making progress on the battlefield. So it's, it's not a very reasonable ask of them. And I think it would also be really difficult domestically to make such a promise for the Zelensky government. He's got a population which something like 99% thinks that Ukraine should be getting all of its territory back and should not stop fighting until that happens. And that is, that was actually the case, very high numbers, maybe not quite as high, even before the counteroffensive. There's not a lot of visible opposition in Ukraine, but do not be fooled. Ukraine has a dynamic and contested polity, which is not going to be enthusiastic about a leadership that wants to give things away before it has to.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great points. And I guess I should sort of qualify what I said, because President Biden did say the other day that, something about talks, when Russia's ready to withdraw from Ukraine, that would include Crimea, though he didn't mention it in that case. But obviously it is the U.S. position that Crimea is Ukraine, Ukrainian as it is. And another thing I'll just sort of mention, since you sometimes it's it is pretty staggering, as you say, Russia has made no sign of making any concessions in terms of territory or really anything else. And it's still, as you say, claiming four regions plus Crimea, but four regions in mainland Ukraine as its own. It controls parts of all four parts it's never controlled, and it has lost, I think, about now half the territory that Russian forces gained, since February 24th has been recaptured by Ukraine. So, these are, the whole kind of foundation or background of this is some pretty crazy claims by Russia. Now, I guess we're running a little short on time, but I'd like to take a few questions if there are any. So please come forward if anyone has any questions. All right, and if not, we can wrap this Twitter space up here. Dr. Olicker, thanks very much for your time and your insights.
Thank you once again for having me. Always a pleasure.
All right, thanks again, and hope you can join us again soon. Once again, I've been speaking to Olga Olicker, Program Director for Europe and Central Asia at the Crisis Group. And my name is Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. As I mentioned at the start, this conversation will also be published as a podcast, and you can subscribe to The Week Ahead in Russia and other RFERL podcasts on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll be back next Monday for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia, and please keep an eye out for my newsletter, The Week in Russia, on Friday. Thanks for listening.